1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RTE.ie and 1850 715 815. Have you just heard him? 51551. Wash your hands. Jan. Jan is in Clare Hall in North Dublin. Jan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Well, more to the point, how are you? You came home from your work in a hospital, was a couple of weeks ago, and there is a Garda, a detective Garda, at your hall door. What did he or she want?
Absolutely. I had a detective sergeant from Coolock Garda Station at the door informing me that my address was out there with criminals who were targeting a prison warden. But they had my address by mistake.
Oh, my God.
And he basically just said that we need to be on guard. We need to be advised on how to stay safe. A crime prevention officer would come to the house.
Okay.
My number would be highlighted at Coolock Garda Station. And if I rang at any time of the day or night, a car would be sent straight down. And he more or less left. And I haven't heard from the guard since.
So the Garda said to you, and it was he, he identified himself.
Yeah, he did.
And they said, we have become aware of a threat by an organised criminal gang, as they call them now, that your address, not your name, but your address has been featuring on their intelligence as the address they believe they have. They're not very organised, disorganised crime gang.
Yeah.
As an address they believe they have, is it in the same area? Not that you know, but...
So apparently the crime prevention officer came down to my house a few days later and went through the house and made a list of all the things I need to do to try and stay safe, like, you know, blocking up the letterbox, screwing it closed, buying fire extinguishers, Joe.
Wow.
That was the first thing he said to me when he rang me to make the appointment to come down. He said, I need you to immediately go out and buy 2 fire extinguishers. Now, can you just imagine someone telling you to do that and block up your letterbox? Because they don't know the level of threat. They don't know if it's intimidation, criminal damage, violence, pipe bomb. They couldn't tell me.
They
were very vague. In what
but they did tell you they believed the threat to be real.
Oh, 100%. They said they investigated it thoroughly and felt now that it is a real threat against the prison warden who does live close by.
Oh,
but they have my address and they can't take the information back because it's been shared amongst several different criminal gangs far and wide.
Okay, so what have you... So you're up the walls. What do you have to... What do they... The Gardaí advise you to do? Okay, buy 2 fire extinguishers immediately. Board up your letterbox.
Yes. I had to get a video doorbell. I had to fit an alarm in the house, a new back door, extra locks on the windows. I have to drive a different way to work every day.
Oh, my God.
In case of kidnap. What else did he say? I was to... If I was to be noticed, I was being followed by anyone, I was to drive straight to a Garda station or a public area, lock myself in my car and ring the guards. He gave me all of that information and left. So I'm kind of left in limbo now. It's a very unusual situation. I've never heard of it before. But I mean, needless to say, I haven't slept a night since he came to my house 2 weeks ago. My son is ill at the moment. He's fractures in his spine, so he's on the flat of his back since last October.
Good God.
So my worry, Joe, is that he's in the house all day. I work in a hospital 12 hours a day, and he's very vulnerable up there in the house. So a neighbour of mine, I obviously had to tell my neighbours because they needed to know for their safety, and they've been very, very helpful. But a neighbour of mine suggested I contact a local TD, which I did.
Yeah.
Tom Brabazon is our local TD, and he's been amazing, Joe.
Yeah,
okay, absolutely amazing.
Well, what did he do? What did he do?
Well, he came up to my house last Friday evening at 6:30 on Good Friday, and he screwed closed my letterbox. He put a post a letterbox up on the wall for me, and he gave me a video doorbell.
Wow.
He's been super. He also gave me 2, because I have to get outside lights now to light up the place when I'm coming and going. So I just have to find an electrician to put them in. But as I said to the crime investigation officer, I don't have the funds to pay for all of these things that you're asking me to do through no fault of my own. I mean, if someone came into my house tonight and trashed it, I'd claim on my house insurance. But if someone came into my house and did that because they're targeting me when I'm innocent, he said that that's tough. You're on your own. It's up to you to make yourself safe.
Yeah, but hang on a minute now. Let's be, and I don't like making comparisons because it when obviously the Taoiseach, according to the Sunday Independent, there's an increased level of threat against him, which is horrific, absolutely horrific, even thinking about it, as is your case. He's got extra armed security. He's also moved house. Stephen Donnelly, the Minister for Health, apparently there was some annoyance at his home, I think it's Greystones, and he got a fence, a pretty substantial fence erected, and that was paid for, I think most people would agree, rightly by the state. There was a famous case going back many years, a Minister for Justice, Sean Doherty, got a, and there was controversy over this, a wall, a significant wall built around his home in Coot Hall, that was paid for by the state. So the state come to you and say, we have received a real and viable threat against this address, against this address.
Everything up to a pipe bomb, Joe. That's what they told me.
Now,
and I asked for funding or assistance or some way of paying for all these things, and I was told there's none available. And yet, a neighbour of mine lives close by to a female prison warden, and she told me the story that something similar had happened to her many years ago, and immediately she was moved out of the house and high-tech CCTV was installed on her property.
This was, rightly so, but this was a prison officer.
He was actually a prison officer,
Now, on the one hand, John, I know part of your reason for contacting us today, and we want to explain this to people, is you want to say to this gang...
Yeah.
If you have an address in Clare Hall, now I need to explain this because you've explained it at great length. First of all, we don't want anyone attacked. That's horrific.
No,
and hopefully the Gardaí, like they've done so well with crime gangs, organised crime gangs, as they call them, in the last 4 or 5 years, hopefully that continues, including in this case. But you want to say to that crime gang, if you have an address in Clare Hall...
Yeah, you've got an innocent. That's not the right address. And as I tried to find out from the crime prevention officer, I would presume they would survey the address to make sure this person lived there before they did act. And apparently that's not the case.
So explain that to me before. Explain that
so
to me.
So I was trying to figure out whether they would put surveillance, these criminals, whoever they are, on my house to see if this man lived there. And apparently that's not the case, that because it's been shared so widely and because these are drug gangs, you wouldn't know what they're taking, or they might just take a big area one day and see that message on their phone and go up there, and we'll just...
Like, I was reading at the weekend extracts from Stephen Breen. He's been on this programme, a great crime journalist, about... It's called The Hitman, I think. I haven't got the actual book, but I was reading extracts about a family, the Wilson family. And in one surveillance tape, that the Gardaí, they put a bug on their car. When they were going and organising to shoot somebody, in the conversation in the car was, he'll be sitting in the back of a pub, or we'll get him driving out of his house, I think it was in Fairview Marino, or as we go into the house, and if there's a baby or a woman in the house, that's hard luck.
Oh, God.
That's hard luck. That's what they said.
Yeah.
That's
and
not going to stop
sure.
us. And if the child... got hit by a ricochet, well, that would be accidental. Unbelievable stuff.
It's horrific. It is horrific. And that's why I was trying to figure out, would it be a thing that they would try to establish that man? Because I just live with my son. There is no man that's been 30 years in the prison service, isn't it my address?
But I don't want to send you into too much worry. But you say you can't get much more worried than not being able to sleep for 2 weeks.
I literally haven't, and I'm actually starting to feel sick, you know, when you can't sleep and you're in work and it just makes you sick, but it's just because you're tired. But how can you sleep with that threat? I mean, I'm going to bed every night thinking this darkness is going to come to my house and either cause criminal damage or potentially violence against me or my son.
Did the Gardaí tell you to cut down your hedge?
Oh, I had hedges surrounding my property. I've had them for 20 years, and I had to have them cut back. My neighbour very kindly did that for me because, again...
Why is that?
Because there was a blind spot when I walked out of my house up to the left-hand side, and they were afraid that that would be where they would come from.
My God.
And ambush me because I wouldn't be able to see them at 6 o'clock in the morning when I'm leaving to go to work.
Now, did they say if the prison officer was male or female?
It's a male. You see, I did try to establish that. They were very cagey about giving me information, and I appreciate that to an extent, but I have a 21-year-old in the house. Now, he's not mobile at the moment, but... I was worried if they did happen to see him, they may mistake him for this guy. And they said, no, this particular prison warden is 30 years in the service, so they have his picture, apparently. So they wouldn't mistake
but
that.
And again, I don't want to put the heart crossways in you. It's already crossways.
No, it is.
But if we're reading stuff like, well, any of us have read the Paul Williams books or the Nicola Tallant's books or the Stephen Breen books on this whole crime thing, know how, like, the number of innocent people that have been shot dead, the number of the relatives of people who were allegedly involved in crime, they've been targeted for one reason and one reason only, because they were a blood relative.
Yeah.
And if someone saw you coming out with it, they say, that's your man's daughter.
Yeah, that's the wife or somebody, you know. And I mean, the guard said to me that it was an ongoing investigation and they'd be in touch with me. I haven't heard from them in 2 weeks. And actually, the Friday before that crime prevention guy came to my house, there was a suspicious looking car outside. Oh, and I took a picture of the car, right?
Yeah.
Showed it to the guy, the guard that came to my house that Saturday. He said he'd follow up and get back to me, and I haven't heard from him since either.
Okay, Dennis Walsh is on the line. 1857 15815 joe@rt.ie. Dennis, you're listening to Jan. This unbelievable story.
Absolutely. I can't believe. What I just said was, I'm an electrical contractor. I put up the lights for whatever she needs. Likewise, I'll do for nothing.
Oh, well, fair play.
Very kind. Very kind of you. Thank you so much.
And are they motion activated, Dennis, sir?
Well, I can put either or either. Yeah, either, okay. I'll pick them up if you want. No problem. We'll pick up motion.
And is there much demand for them now? Like, we're told crime is down generally. Burglary is down.
A lot of people put PIR lights up. Yeah, it just someone comes up, the light comes on. It just deters them from touching your car or whatever.
And how soon? I'm not trying to put you under pressure, Dennis. But
we'll get them done this week.
Amazing.
This week, yeah, no problem.
That's so kind. Thank you,
that's
Dennis.
Dennis Walsh of Electric Works and Walkers.
Very kind.
Now, John, the other problem is, if I can take that disbelief sound out of my voice for a minute. The other problem is that if you start putting up lights and CCTV and the new video, people will say, what's she up to? Will they? I don't know.
Well, I had to tell my neighbours. The first thing I had to do was tell my neighbours, because they needed to be aware. Because if these criminals are so stupid, they have the wrong address, they may get the wrong house as well if they did come.
Yeah.
So my neighbours are all on high alert and they're all aware of what's going on. So they've seen the letterbox being screwed closed on Friday evening and all of this. But I have no choice. I have to try and do all these things.
Have you explained it to your son?
I've told him a certain amount, Joe. I mean, he's going through an awful lot. He's only 21 years of age.
Okay.
He's literally on the flat of his back since last October. He has spinal fractures. He's had several procedures. And you see, the problem is I had to pay for these procedures privately because of COVID and the public system.
Mm.
He was literally screaming in pain. So all of the money I had, any savings I had, is gone on his procedures. And then I had to go into the public system because the money ran out. Now, lucky enough, I've got a very good consultant who's having another procedure done on the 16th of April. But immediately after he has these done, he literally is immobile. Because he literally has to be flat on his back. So he's in a very, very vulnerable situation. And I'm so annoyed. Like, as a law-abiding citizen of this country, I've paid my tax all my life. I've never so much as had a parking ticket. That this was landed on my door 2 weeks ago. And the Gardaí, having so much, picked up the phone, told me, give me any information, any follow-up on the one picture I did send them, they never came back to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just an absolute disgrace. And as I said to the crime prevention guy, if I could afford to buy a new back door and install an alarm and extra locks on windows, I would have done that by now. And he just shrugged his shoulders at me. Very nice man. But he didn't have an answer. Off he went. And you're on your own.
John is a retired prison officer, 51551, wash your hands. John, listening to what John is saying, it sounds a serious and a real threat, as the Gardaí say.
There is no doubt about that. She needs to take it really serious. And the thing about it is, her neighbour down the road, the serving prison officer, I mean, they would have been treated in the exact same fashion as she's been treated. You know, they would have gave all that information to them as well. Mm-hmm. And they have to, you know, the sad part about it is that the prison service are not a frontline service, and they've been told that on a very regular basis by by everybody. When in actual fact, there couldn't be any more frontline living with this on a daily basis. And as we know, Joe, and you remember it very well, where my colleagues' homes were burned before, back in the 70s and 80s. It was a part of life for prison officers. We were told never to let our car go under half full of petrol, half full of diesel. There was no mobile phones back then. You'd let your family know, I'm leaving work now and I'll be home at a certain time. And if you didn't arrive home within 15 minutes of that time, family were worried about you. You know, so I would say that this lady needs to be very vigilant, as my colleagues, former colleagues, need to be as well.
Absolutely.
You know,
and as you rightly point out, John, at the heart of this is a okay, they've mistaken, they've got the wrong address, but at the heart of this is a threat to a real person.
That's correct.
Because of the job, job they're doing for the public.
That's correct, on behalf of the state. And I've been listening very careful to you, Joe, over the last couple of weeks. You've been talking a lot about people in prison and one thing and another. And a lot of those decisions are well beyond the pay grade of the people that have been threatened. You know, and the men and women of the Irish Prison Service of today are very professional people. You know, they're very, very working, caring, hard-working people. And they shouldn't have to live like this, as this woman is experiencing now, through no fault of her own. And as I said earlier, this is a daily part of life for prison officers all over the country.
And John, would a prison officer, if there's a real, which there has been, as we know, and carried out, but if a prison officer is told there's a real and viable threat from an organised crime gang against you and your home, would you get any help in modifying your home?
There may be some available, but I couldn't categorically state, Joe, what that is now. But I know back in the day, particularly in the early 80s, when I had to do it with my home, we were given a grant to put in, but it was paid back through your wages, to put in a security system into your home.
There should be some protocol. There should be some protocol in place for some resources to be available to people in these situations, particularly innocents. But literally, the door is closed. The guard will come, and it's their duty to inform you of the threat. And in actual fact, he said to me, "I hope I don't see you again, because if I do, you'll have to go into a protection service
program."
That would be the next step, that it would be threat to life. So, you know, they can't just walk into your house and the state just sit back and say, well, it's your problem.
Well, the word innocence doesn't reflect very well, because everyone is innocent here.
Yeah, of course.
There is a conjecture there that there's something guilty about the prison officer. The prison prison officers today are doing their job as they always done.
That's understood.
Yeah.
And we remember the prison officer Brian Stack.
Brian Stack in particular.
Who was savagely murdered by the IRA. On the streets of Dublin, and still no one charged with that.
No one. And there was numerous houses belonging to houses of prison officers burnt out back in the 80s. I won't mention any names, but they come to mind. And, their families had to escape those homes and were lucky.
Yeah.
They didn't lose life, you know. But unfortunately, that is the way of the modern criminal, and intimidation. It's just worse now than it ever has been, because they're more mobile now, because with the highways and byways, so was then, it's major roads now. And, people seem to thrive on this. You know, some people get a lot of mileage out of it. You know, but the prison service and the people, men and women serving there, deserve the respect of the state and should get every help, as you should, to ensure that they're able to come and go to and do their work without interference or anything.
It's also worth... Again, I'm totally agreeing with Brian, but I'm also conscious of not putting the heart crossways in you, Jan, but like... there was a woman who was on Liveline many years ago. Now, this was not the cause of in 2006 Bybes Salute. She's a mother of young mother of two, lived in North Dublin, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember.
And
her
savage murder was organised from inside a prison.
That's correct.
From inside a prison.
Yeah.
I was serving back then, and I remember it very well, Joe.
Horrific. Brian Bourne is in, works for Actfast Fire. Brian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
We already have motion activated lights. They'll be installed this week, Brian. Can you help?
Yeah, I'd like to offer some fire extinguishers, fire blankets, and smoke detectors.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'd be glad to help.
Okay.
Thanks a million, Brian.
And the other thing, I don't know how this came into my head at the weekend. Do people know how to use fire extinguisher, Brian?
No, unless they've attended a course with through their work.
Okay.
And I'd also like to offer the family, show them how to use it.
Give them
a talk through on what to do. God forbid.
Okay, it's a terrible conversation to be having, Jan. I'm asking a private company, the second one now that's come on, will you help Jan protect herself against this threat from an organised crime gang? Will you show her how to use a fire extinguisher? Mother of God.
It's hard to believe, isn't it? I can't believe it myself.
Would they be interested in protecting that unfortunate prison officer as well, and maybe
anything
extra that comes out of it to help this unfortunate family too, that they may very well be burned out of their home?
Yeah, but John, wouldn't it be shameful on the state if a servant of the state who had a viable threat made against him or her, that they didn't get help from the state? That would be shameful. It's shameful what's happening, Jan. But it'd be shameful if a servant of the state, given that servants of the state in the form of government ministers or whatever, and nobody should countenance any threat against any person, will get help. I think if a prison officer didn't get help, the POA, it was a very strong, a very good union, they would be on top of this. They would be on top of this.
Absolutely, yeah.
I hope so, Joe.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be back after this. 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. We've been contacted by Jan, who lives, and she specifically wants to tell people where she lives for the reason which will become obvious. She lives in Clare Hall, which is North Dublin, near, I suppose, Dublin Airport good indicator. And on coming home from her work in a hospital 2 weeks ago, she was met at her hall door by a Garda detective sergeant, who said to her that her address has become known to the Gardaí through, obviously, good intelligence work, as an address being identified by an organised crime gang as the home of a prison officer that they are targeting. And the address they have is Jan's address. And the Garda said, you must take precautions. Now, those precautions, he said, and in subsequent conversations with the force, you have to buy two fire extinguishers, immediately. Yeah. Block up your letterbox, move your son out of the house, plan an escape route out of your house at night time, if nothing is. I'm just doing through the list you gave us in the email. Install an alarm, extra locks on the windows, get a video doorbell, get outside lights, get a new security back door, get extra smoke alarms, fire extinguisher, and cut down the hedges that surround the front garden. You have to drive a different way to work every day. You were advised on what to do if you were followed. Go to a park in a public area or else head straight to a Garda station. There would be an alert on your address in the phone number. In other words, if your phone number comes up on the screen in Coolock Garda station, that will activate an immediate response. And did they say how long this will stay in place for, this immediate response?
Well, that was the other thing. Normally in these situations, he said the alert remains for 30 days or at most 3 months. But the alert on my property has been put up for 12 months.
My God.
And will then be reviewed. So there's no end to this, Joe.
And the point we're making, among other things, is Jan has to pay for all of this herself. And there's loads of complications. One, that her son is immobile because of a back injury, and he's 21. And two, the amount of money involved is phenomenal, is substantial. So far, Act Fast Fire have they're supplying fire extinguishers, fire blankets, plus lessons on how to use them. Electric Works in Walkinstown are going out to put up free motion-activated lights. Is Manguard still there? Okay, we had another call there a few seconds ago.
And Joe, I got on the internet there and was Googling alarm companies and places that supply back doors and whatnot, and I couldn't even get anybody to ring me back, first of all. But the ones that did, you're talking $2,000 for a back door.
Yeah.
And then I go to the crime prevention guy and he shrugs his shoulders at me. Do you know, I feel very much like they gave me the information, they put the alert in the Garda station, they sent the crime prevention guy up, and it's more or less, well, if anything happens to her, we gave her all the information and it was up to her to do what we advised.
Okay, and you say, well, apart from the people that are phoning and the companies that are phoning into this programme, the other person who's helped you in a real way is Councillor Tom Brabazon, who's former Lord Mayor of Dublin. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And you tell us what you did, because you went above and beyond the call of duty.
He really did, Joe.
And tell us why you did this.
Well, obviously, look, I was very concerned about this lady's welfare. I mean, she's working 12 hours a day. She described a situation that I was really, really concerned about. And, you know, it was a practical way, you know, a few bits and pieces that I did for her to try and help her out. It wasn't that big of a thing for me to do. And I was happy to try and give her a dig out. She was described a situation where she's working 12-hour shifts as a nurse and then find it very difficult to sleep. So, you know, that just catches up on somebody very, very quickly. Yeah. And
so you boarded up the letterbox. And how come, did you go out and buy two fire extinguishers or you had two to spare?
No, what happened was I would be close to a lady in a neighbouring parish. Mm-hmm. Who does a lot of very good work in the area, and I kind of, on an anonymous basis, discussed this with her, and I said, look, is there any chance you could help out here? Because I know that she raises funds and so on, and she when she heard the story, she was very concerned as well, and she was really happy to rally around and help out with that. So, you know, the community... The few people in the community that I spoke to about this problem were all very, very helpful and were more than willing to help this lady out in this very, very difficult thing that she's going through at the moment.
Okay. And do you have many people come under threat, Tom, in your area, do you know?
Well, I mean, Jan certainly wouldn't be the first, and I have come across situations before, but nothing... Like where Jan was very vulnerable in the sense that, you know, she's there with her son, as she's already described to you, Joe. So I was, you know, really particularly concerned about her because of that as well. And the worry that she would be suffering when she's away at work and so on. So that's why I got...
Okay, fair play. Stay with us, Tom. Sarah is from Manguard Plus. It's a well-known company, an alarm company. Sarah, good afternoon. You're listening to Jan.
Hello, Joe, and hello, Jan. Yes,
hi,
we're based, how are you? And certainly what you're going through is a living hell. It's a nightmare that no human being should have to endure. So, Jan, on behalf of Manguard Plus, we're Ireland's largest privately owned security firm. We would like to fit a top high-end monitoring alarm system for you, and we're going to monitor that 24 hours a day, free gratis.
Brilliant.
And really,
thank you
know,
so
as an Irish company, a very, very proud company, we're very willing and glad to be in a position to be able to help you go through this absolute nightmare that is horrendous for you.
That's so kind of you. Thank you, Sarah. That's huge.
And
that's
Sarah,
really giving
me peace. Sarah, just explain the 24-hour monitoring. You If something,
well, Manguard Plus, we're actually the only company in the country, Joe, that has a control and command centre that is monitored. We were actually the first security company in the country to install that. And to the best of my knowledge, we're still the only company that has one
So somebody is looking, somebody or some people, at 24/7, there's somebody looking at those screens.
Absolutely.
And if one of the screens activates, you can see the address immediately and ring the Gardaí, I presume.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, that's amazing, Sarah.
No, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
You know, I mean,
see, it's one thing when I'm there because I feel, you know, at least I'm there with my son, and you know, if something did happen. But when I'm in work and I think of how vulnerable he is, without the alarm there, that he would have a panic button or something to press to try and get help. Mm-hmm. That's what's really concerning me. So that's huge to have that installed.
Great.
Okay.
Delighted
Thanks,
to help.
Sarah.
So,
Joe
has my number, and
we'll be
onto that as soon as possible.
Okay, well
amazing.
Done.
So,
well
thank
done.
You so much, Joe, for the opportunity.
Okay.
And Jan, I really hope that gives you wonderful relief. And
thank
on
you,
behalf
Sarah.
Of Manguard Plus, we certainly, as they say, I don't like it, it's a cliche, but we have your back.
Okay.
Oh, God, that's
okay.
so kind. Thank you, Sarah.
Okay,
thank
Sarah,
you.
Thanks, Anita.
Oh,
Sarah
Joe.
From Manguard Plus. Okay, say there, Jan. More after this break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Talking to Jan, who's contacted us. She lives in Clare Hall in North Dublin. She was visited by the, she works in the frontline hospital, by the way. She was visited by the Gardaí 2 weeks ago to say there is a viable and real threat on your life, on your property, this particular address, because the address has been detected by Gardaí in intelligence-led operation, communications between organised crime gangs, within them and between the gangs. They regarded the threat as real and urged her to immediately take action, buy fire extinguisher, block up your letterbox, move your son out of the house, plan an escape route, cut down the hedge at the front, learn to change your route every single day, get up to speed on what to do if you are being followed. The list is endless. But all of this must be paid for by Jan herself. There's no help. And that's why I presume we're getting so many offers so far. House alarms, lights, fire extinguishers, fire blankets, etc. 24-hour monitoring by Manguard. Patrick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
A retired prison officer. Tell us your observation on this, because it's a real life experience.
It is. Look, really, the way I'm ringing up this, it's just I feel so sorry for that lady. I worked in the prison for 30 plus years. I worked in the operations support group, which was well set up after you got that famous phone call from E1 London in Portlaoise. And part of our job was to stop drugs entering the prison estates. And from that, in 2013, I received a threat that the Gardaí felt was viable, that I would be shot for basically doing my job. Now, completely different to what that lady has to go through. I had the support of the prison service, which meant that they put in place alarms, electric gates, security lighting, all those bits and pieces that I needed. The Gardaí would have come to the house. It's showed me what to look for in the line of a pipe bomb and all those different things. So I just feel really sorry for...
And did you get, Patrick, did you get, say, a panic alarm?
Yes, I got panic alarms in the bedroom. They offered me what they call the strong room as well, which would be in the bedroom, which you basically walk into. You press a button, you get in. But Joe, look, it was totally different for someone like me that was working, getting paid to do this job. But the big fear, and I can hear it in that lady as well, it's not so much the fear for yourself. It's the fear that my wife could have been driving my car, or my son could have been driving my car, and mistakenly then something could have tragically happened. And that's the big fear. You know, and I think I can hear that lady twice too.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so angry, actually, because I'm being given no support, no backup. I'm just left in limbo now to deal with this situation that's been put on me. you know, and it's just really a disgrace that I'm a citizen of this country, paid my tax all my life, and I've literally just been left high and dry to try and deal with this.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. I mean, the people that have rang in, I've only heard bits of it, that have offered to do different services. They're absolutely wonderful. But amazing. You should not have to depend on
that. I shouldn't,
that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, Sean Brabazon was amazing. From the minute I called him, my neighbour just advised me to ring because he knew he was very busy in the community helping people.
Okay.
He was amazing, but he can only do to a point. And then I thought, well, I'm going to have to talk to Joe because... Mm. I've listened to the show and I've heard people's stories in the past, you know.
Okay. Yeah, look, the threat you're facing now and the fact of your son and him not being well at the moment, what you're going through is horrendous, much worse than I would have gone through because at least I was working and it's different. It's different when you're involved in the organisation and I had the backing of the Irish Prison Service in the sense that they came out immediately. There's threats every day to prison officers. But not all threats result in that type, this level of activity by the prison service. So threats are graded. So if they've come to you and said it's a viable threat, it is a viable threat. And that's not to frighten you, but that's just to be honest about it. It is a very viable threat. The guards don't just do this willy-nilly. There is threats to prison officers literally on a daily basis, but only a very small number that they see as viable and they have to act. But you should have the support of the state. Okay. You should have support.
Okay, we'll leave it at that for the time being. By the way, Patrick, you mentioned John Daly, who phoned Liveline back in 2007 from the Midlands prison.
From Portleach, Joe.
From Portleach, okay, I know there's a difference now, yeah. And what was the group that was set up after that, the Operational Support Group? What did that do? What was the task?
It was indirect, I mean, everyone believes it, from that phone call that you received on Lifeline. The Operational Support Group was set up to basically put, there was three elements to the support group. One was to set up screening areas in the prison to prevent contraband entering the prisons, which would be kind of an airport-style security screening, which wasn't in the prisons prior to that, with the exception of Portleach Prison. There was a section set up to gather intelligence within the prison estates, and then the other one was the canine unit, which was the passive drug dogs that would be used to detect drugs going into the prison. So that was set up in 2008.
Okay. And Patrick, when you were under a real threat, as Jan says she was told she was, like when you retired from the service, that's no guarantee it's lifted. Because part of the threat is a threat against people, retired prison officers, is to frighten current prison officers.
Yeah, look, Joe, to be honest, in my case, a lot of it was intimidation. We were stopping drugs from entering.
Yeah, okay,
prison.
Well done.
So
yeah.
It was to take us basically out of the line of that. Like, I still have the alarms and obviously everything that was put into my house. I retired a year. It's still there. No one will turn around to me and write me a letter saying that there is no viable threat anymore. Because one never knows. How long is a piece of string? No one knows when this is going to... It's not there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Nothing has happened to me, thank God. But it's, at the time, it was a little scary.
Okay. Yeah, very frightening.
Okay.
And I feel very sorry for that lady.
Okay. Patrick, again, thank you for your service and all the staff and the prison service. Thank you, Patrick. John, there's no way the Gardaí have made a mistake.
No.
Are you sure?
No. they said that they had the information a couple of days before Paddy's Day, and on the 22nd of March they came to my house, so they said they felt they were now in a position that they had to make me aware. So something must have happened in those days.
Okay, well, if we get any more information, as I say, as Patrick pointed out, it's a bit bizarre that on the one hand, you have to, one element of your plea is, please don't attack anyone. It's not
Absolutely.
Please, we shouldn't, it's a crime. Stop it. But as we say, we know enough about the organised crime gangs to know they'll stop at nothing. To appeal, even though you didn't come on, I didn't think we'd get that reaction in terms of people saying, which I have, we're going to give you a 24-hour monitoring of your house. We're going to give you fire extinguisher. We're going to give you outdoor lights. We're going to help you in any other way we can. But anyway, that's the reaction that's coming in. John, how are you managing in your work? You say you're a frontline worker.
It's very difficult because the lack of sleep is now starting to get to me. I mean, the only time I can really sleep is I'll nap at the weekend during the day when I feel it's, the threat is a bit lower because it's daylight and there's a lot of people moving around outside. So if I kind of can't nap at the weekend, it helps me get through the week. But by Friday, then I'm on my knees again, you know. Okay. I'm just really annoyed that I just, like, these people are ringing into you and they're so kind of them to help me and offer help to me, but I shouldn't have to do this. I should have been offered this help, as should anybody in this situation, without having to go to, like, your counsellor and to talk to you, Joe. We shouldn't have to be doing this. There should be some protocol in place to keep citizens safe, especially when they're put under this threat.
Okay, you mind yourself, Jan.
Thanks,
Joe. We'll keep in touch. Okay,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
You too.
Bye bye.
Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Elizabeth, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. It was the 31st of March. What happened?
I drove up to Vincent's Hospital. I got up at 5:30 in the morning, left my house in Wexford at 6:30, got to Vincent's at approximately 8:15. There's a lot of building works going on the left as you drive into Vincent's Hospital. And there's disability parking.
I have an
adaptive car.
Okay.
I parked there. I was in for an 8-hour infusion.
Wow.
I have primary progressive multiple sclerosis.
Oh, okay. Sorry to
My partner
that.
Was on a 24-hour shift, so wasn't home until leaving work until 11 that morning.
Mm-hmm.
So her sister drove her up to Dublin to pick me up. And when I came out, I was brought down by a wheelchair. And when I came out, Joe, my car was clamped.
And did it give a reason why your car... Was there anything on the windscreen to tell you, apart from saying, give us money, was there anything on the windscreen telling you the reason why you were clamped?
Because I had overstayed by 4 hours. But there was no signs to say you would be clamped after 4 hours. No signs at all. Now, when the man came to take the clamp off, I said, what have I done wrong? What have I done wrong?
Okay.
And he said, you're 4 hours over the time. And I said, there are no signs. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, there was signs there, but I think the builders took them down.
But that's not your fault.
No. Now, I sent in an appeal, Joe, and they refused me.
And
to the clamping crowd.
And what grounds are they?
They gave no explanation as to why. They had to look at the evidence and the appeal was refused.
And the company is APOCA, APOCA.
Did
they say why they refused?
Looking at the evidence that I overstayed by 4 hours.
Yeah, but did they look at the evidence to see was there signs there that the man or the woman who came along said signs were removed by the builders? That's not your fault.
No, it's not, but they still refused the appeal.
And did you say to them, like, it's not that you were, not that anyone does, but sorry, it's not that you were swanning around St. Vincent's Hospital just to kill time. You were on a procedure that took 8 hours.
Yes.
Not pleasant at the best of times, I'm sure. I'm sure the staff are brilliant.
Oh, fantastic.
But when you said that to them...
Made no difference, Joe. What the guy said was, new rules are in place because staff were using their nannies, mammies and aunties' cars parking with blue badge to do their shift. That's exactly what he said. Also, he was not wearing a proper mask. He just had a cloth pulled up over his face.
He said nurses and medical staff were using their nannies, their mammies, and other relations, disabled discs.
Yes.
Fraudulently.
Now he didn't say nurses.
Okay.
He said new rules are in place.
Yeah.
Because staff
okay.
were using their nannies, mammies, and aunties' cars,
okay.
parking with blue badges,
okay.
for their shift.
All right. Okay. We'll get on to them and when are you how often do you have to go through this?
Well, this was my
procedure.
This was my first 8 hour, because of the COVID lockdowns. So my next infusion is in September.
Will that be 8 hours as well?
It will. Yes. Yeah. It's every 6 months, Joe.
And would you be able to show the clamping company a letter to say that your procedure took 8 hours? Or something, an email or something?
That was sent into them, Joe.
Oh, okay, you've done everything. Elizabeth, you must be, apart from your procedure, you must be exhausted, were you?
I just wanted to go home, Joe, and go to bed. I was so tired. And I mean, brought down with the wheelchair, I have a cane. I wouldn't have parked there, Joe, if it said 4.5 hours, knowing I had an 8 hour procedure.
Yeah. By the way, what time did you? You're up at 5:30, as you say, to
get
from Wexford. What time did you get home at?
Oh God, I can't remember what time it was, Joe. I was so distraught.
And when you're, is this infusion? Does it last for one sequence of 8 hours, or is it? Do you get a break?
No, it's continuous 8 hours.
And are you in an armchair or lying down?
Yes,
or?
You're in a lovely, comfortable armchair.
Okay.
Yep.
And say, do you can take a meal or a cup of tea or a bath bathroom break, I presume.
Oh, you can, yes. Yeah. Yeah, no problem. The staff are wonderful there. Yes, yeah.
Peter Duffy is on the line. Peter, good afternoon.
Joe, good afternoon to you.
Okay, tell us your bit of help for Elizabeth.
Yeah,
please.
I was just listening to Elizabeth there a moment ago, and I only got clamped once in my life, about 2 years ago. I was in Dublin.
Okay.
And I came out, and I looked at the sign again, and I read it again, and I said, I've done exactly what it said on the sign. So I wrote into a company called APCOA, but I don't know whether I'm allowed to mention them or not.
Yeah, they were mentioned already.
They have a kind of an appeals process.
Yeah.
I think I might have wrote them twice. Oh, no, I was totally in the wrong.
Okay.
And then I found out, actually, that there is a clamping regulator. So I wrote into the clamping regulator,
okay.
and I just wrote down the facts, just all exactly. Right. And I had sent in a couple of screenshots of the sign. And about a week or 10 days later, I got a lovely letter back from the clamping regulator saying, look, yes, we've looked at your case, you're completely in the right, and we have instructed, this is what they told us, they had instructed APCOA to send you back your 100, I think it was €120, and to send it back straight away. So,
okay.
So there's a clamping regulator, Joe, and in my view, they're just fair and independent and above board.
Okay. Now, so even this is helpful, Elizabeth, because I presume a clamping regulator will ask, before you go to the clamping regulator, you will already have to have been rejected by the company, which you have.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I presume, is there a time limit on how soon after you can, when does it, your chance to appeal it to the regulator expire?
30 days.
30, okay. But are you going to appeal to the clamping regulator, or are you exhausted at this stage?
Well, I didn't investigate it, Joe, so I'm afraid I have no knowledge of that.
Okay, are you going to go to the clamping regulator, Elizabeth?
Well, I've notified the Transport Authority Ireland.
Oh, you're not leaving this. Fair play to you.
No, I'm not.
Okay, even though you have enough on your... When were you first diagnosed with multiple sclerosis?
2017, Joe.
And how did you notice that initially, Elizabeth?
I'm just losing the power in my legs and, you know, you go through flare-ups. So I'm under Professor Tuberty and he got
Niall,
me on the infusion.
Ryan's brother, yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
As they all are, but they're in the hospital.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you'd easily get a letter from his team to say the procedure was 8 hours.
Well, Joe, even sending in my appointment with the time, everything
of course,
on
it. Okay.
They just ignored it.
Okay, well, you're going to appeal to the regulator.
Hopefully that I'll get a response, yeah.
Yeah, well, it sounds... Are you, Elizabeth, are you very cast down by this, or you're just determined to right or wrong? You sound...
I want this highlighted, that okay. these companies are doing this to people in hospitals who are parked in a disability zone without proper signs.
Now, remember that the reason why hospitals employ clamping companies is because parking in hospitals, and it's changing in our nearest neighbour, Scotland have abolished charge the hospital's ability to charge for parking for people visiting our patients. But it is an incredibly big earner for hospitals in Ireland.
Yeah. But to clamp somebody in a disability area. Just not right.
Okay.
And to refuse an appeal with photographs and evidence. So if they can see signs on the photographs I've sent in, well, I find that amazing.
Okay.
Well, there are no signs.
Okay, but you're going to the... How long did a regulator take to come back to you, Peter?
Oh, I'd say it was actually about 10 days.
Okay.
About 10 days. But the other people, actually, when I applied or appealed the case to them initially, they certainly, I would say, most unhelpful, most uncooperative. And I had no faith in them anyway.
Okay, because, okay, but you were vindicated by the regulator.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Look, I just read the sign.
Dublin, Beaumont, no, this is not the hospital, Beaumont Hospital in Dublin. They earn $1.5 million clear in car parking charges every year, and the list goes on from different hospitals. Depends on the size of the hospital and the amount of space they have. But it is multi-story car parks and underground car parks and hospitals are big. Now they're invaluable in terms of if you need to get to visit somebody or you're a patient or whatever. But they are big money spinners in the hospitals. I know they cost money to run. Okay, and Elizabeth, does the 8-hour transfusion, more importantly, make a difference to your life?
Oh, yes, Joe, yeah.
In what way?
It stops all the inflammation in my body.
So
it targets that inflammation.
Okay. And when you're undergoing the procedure and you're sitting there, as you say, in a comfortable armchair, is there a sensation in your body in terms of coldness or...
Yeah, you get a little bit of coldness in your legs, but that's all. You know, I don't really notice it going through my body.
But the difference the next day is good. You begin to feel better.
Well, in, we'll say, a month. You know, you'd start to feel better. But it does affect, you know, you'll get sores on your skin from it.
Okay.
You know, you'll get breakout of psoriasis. Yeah. It's just the side effects of the infusion.
Okay. And what's the pandemic been like for you, Elizabeth?
Well, I'm on lockdown now since the 12th of March. So the only places I've been are hospitals. I have not been out, Joe.
In over a year?
No.
The only place you've been in over a year is a hospital.
That's all. Yep. Okay. Yep. For my appointments.
Yeah,
because
of course.
I have quite a few appointments. Yeah. Because it affects many different organs in your body.
Yeah.
MS. So you've different consultants to see.
By the way, on the day... Elizabeth, when you're clamped, don't you have to pay on the spot?
Yes, and I don't have a credit card. It was Ruth, my partner.
Okay.
She was trying to get the clamp off before I got out because because she knew I would just be so upset.
She was trying to get the clamp off. You can't get them off, Elizabeth.
No, but she was trying to ring the operator.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
So that when I come out.
Fair play to her.
You know. But
and Elizabeth, as you have been off the road for over a year, apart from hospital visits, do you get any reduction in car insurance, sir?
No, not in insurance, but I don't pay tax on my car.
Yeah, well, that applies to all this. Yeah, that's right. And that's only right.
But the fact is, too, Joe, that you pay the Irish Wheelchair Association for your blue badge.
Yeah.
And you don't get a blue badge without a primary medical certificate.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, you don't, in other words, you don't get a blue badge on a whim. You have to prove that you're eligible.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, of course. Of
yes.
Course.
Okay. Because you're examined by a doctor and you get your primary medical certificate.
Okay.
And but I think also what's going, you know, with the pandemic, any cars that are in a hospital, they are in for a reason in hospital.
Serious,
they're not visiting because there are no visitors.
Yeah, serious reason.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, well, Elizabeth, kind regards to you and Ruth at this difficult time. But as I know from your energy there, you're not leaving this and you've got some guidance now on how to, you needed the guidance on how to proceed. So let us know how you get on with the regulator, will you, Elizabeth, please?
I will indeed, Joe. Okay. And I won't give up on it,
I know you won't. Well done. Okay, stay safe, Elizabeth, you and those around you. Thanks, Joe. Thanks indeed.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Ben Johnson. Ben, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Explain this one to me. It's a little bit confusing, but go ahead. You bought train tickets.
So what's happened, Joe, is obviously we were going to be coming out of lockdown this week, and then the situation changed to next week. So thinking that we were going to be coming out of lockdown this week, I decided to book I'm a college student, so I decided to book a trip to Waterford with myself and a friend of mine and booked the tickets. That's absolutely fine. Got it sorted. Then realized the government announced that we were going to be coming out on the 12th of April instead of this week.
Okay, yeah.
So I went back to Irish Rail and cancelled my booking, thinking that I was going to get a full refund. The tickets, it was €63 for the return ticket for the two tickets.
Okay.
So went onto their website, applied for my refund, and they said, you'll get your refund of €31.96. within 5 working days. And I'm kind of thinking, $31.96, that's only half the amount that I paid. So, you know, I booked, like I'm a freelance journalist, so I kind of do a lot of traveling and stuff. And I've had to cancel other trips that I was going to make. I was due to go to Indianapolis for the Indy 500, you know, canceled trips, getting refunds and stuff from that. No problem, like a full refund. But when it comes to Irish Rail and I'm only getting like 50% of the cost that I've actually paid. And yes, I know, obviously, there's the pandemic, and that's beside the point. It's the fact of the matter is I paid out €63. I'm a student, and I'm only getting half of that back.
Is the other half a normal cancellation fee, or did they offer?
Honestly, I have no idea. It just said, like, when I was sorting out the refund, it said, underneath it, it said €31 cancellation fee. And I was like, hang on a second, that's a bit strange.
Did you get the offer of an alternative date for your journey?
No.
Okay.
I just thought it was really strange, you know, like I've cancelled flights with Aer Lingus and, you know, I've got full refunds, you know. As I said, I was due to go to the States next month, I got a full refund on that. And, you know, when it comes to like a train journey, you know, And I mean, it's expensive, you know. I mean, I could probably fly to Waterford for less than that, you know. But yeah, it's something that I was just a little bit upset about. But you know,
well, were you being a bit premature? Because okay, everyone was told that today was the day for changes after the Easter bank holiday, so nobody could go to their, as we heard last week, to their mobile homes or holiday homes or whatever outside 5K. But the changes from the 12th, it only means that the travel limit is extended within your county or 20K.
Yeah, to be honest, Joe, it was more of, I was trying to be optimistic and hopeful because, you know, we've all been in lockdown for the year. You know, as I said, I'm a college student, you know, I'm studying journalism. And, you know, I've been doing my classes via Zoom. You know, last semester I was in college, you know, maybe I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I've actually physically been on campus. So it's just something to kind of look forward to potentially, and it's kind of gone out the window, obviously. But it's not that. It's the fact that the cancellation fee was there. I don't, like, it's not that I'm upset that I can't travel. It's because I know none of us can travel at the moment. It's the fact that I'm only getting half the refund. I'm not getting the full refund, you know, particularly, as I say, I'm a student, because 63 quid is expensive for anyone, but particularly someone who's a student like myself, you know.
Yeah. Now, on the other end of it, I saw, where was I reading this morning? I think the Irish Times, Dublin bus income for 2020 was half the income for 2019. Should no transport company could survive on that.
True, but it's still like that. That may be true, but I mean, are they getting bonuses? You don't know. Like, they more than likely are. I have no idea. But again, I'm just saying, like, my point is that given the situation that we're currently in, you know, I've given them €63, but I'm only getting half of that back. I should be getting the full amount back, not half of that, you know?
Okay. Okay, Ben, you see, you'd be asked them, what's your trip to Waterford? Because the ads for Irish Rail say we have 25% capacity for those making essential journeys. Was it an essential journey, Ben?
Well, it would have been, Joe, because, like, as I say, like, I've been, you know, I was going to be doing a report down there, you know, like, for college.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, like, I'm a journalist, so I was going to be doing stuff down there, you know. But, you know, it's just unfortunate, like, the situation that I've found myself in, you know.
Okay. Go safely. That's Ben Johnson. Thanks, Neil. Ben. Jackie Kilfoyle. Jackie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. I was just listening to that lovely lady there speaking. She was in the hospital about
Elizabeth,
the
camping. Yeah,
Elizabeth. No, a similar thing happened to me. I had my mum and my godson both in wheelchairs in town. And what happened was we came back to the car after about 20 past 7 in the evening. And we were parked in the wheelchair spot because both of them were in wheelchairs. And the car was clamped. Now, the chap, the clamper was on a couple of cars in front of me. And he was unclamping another car, not in a wheelchair spot. So I went up to him and explained the situation to him. And he said that he wouldn't even lift his head to look at me. He said I had to ring the number that was on the sheet. But eventually, anyway, after getting no joy from them, he said I'd have to pay the money when I rang the number. And I said I didn't have the money. So he said, oh, well, you can't, the car won't be unclamped until you do it. But anyway, I had to end up getting my brother to come in from Parmestown, and he sorted it out on the card, and he appealed it for me. And the attitude was, first of all, they weren't going to pay the money back. But then, as he said, you don't lose your disability after 4.5 hours or after 7 o'clock.
Very good point.
So that's what I just wanted to tell that lady.
Yeah.
If you have a disability, you have a disability for life.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have time spans on people.
Very good point.
In parking spots.
And did you win your appeal?
We did. We did in the end. But it took a long time. My brother looked after that for me. Patrick, well, and he we
and,
did.
And Jackie, you were saying you two people in a wheelchair. That two.
I had my mum. Yeah, my mum. My mum lives with me, Betty. She's okay. Listening now at the moment. Actually, at home, you can say hello to her.
Okay, Betty. And Betty Kilfoyle, is that?
No, Betty Dunn.
Betty Dunn. Ah, but yeah. No, Betty. Well,
she loves listening to you.
She's
yeah.
Great. Great person. I don't. Yeah. I'm just saying. She sounds great. Big shout out to Betty. Betty Dunn.
Yeah, and I had my godson who'd only had spinal surgery a couple of months before that, and
And what age was he?
He's 15 now, so he was 13 at the time. But what I'm saying to Elizabeth is, what she can go back and say is, she's diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2070. She's not going to lose that disability now. She's only going to get progressively worse. You know what I mean? So why should it be, when you go to a hospital, why should it be a time span on a wheelchair spot for anybody, no matter what your disability is?
Yeah, good point. Strong point. Well,
I mean, you're given the sticker, you're given the blue sticker when you fill out the form and your doctor's report and all. That's why they give you that sticker. Why do they put a time span on that?
Okay. And how's your godson?
Yes, he's doing well now at the moment.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
My mum's fully vaccinated too. Thanks
well
to the Dogsbury
done.
Clinic. Yeah, Dr. Stewart and his team in the Dogsbury Clinic. She got her second vaccine on Friday.
Okay.
So she's doing well, thank God.
Okay,
yeah.
And kind regards
but just to say to Elizabeth
Betty,
that, as I say, if she wants to go down that route, that
that's
you
the
don't
argument.
Lose your disability.
Yeah,
yeah.
Great
and
time.
For anybody else that's stuck like that. But it's absolutely disgraceful to think that they can clamp.
Okay.
People in wheelchair spots, you know.
Okay, well, stay safe, Jackie Kilfoyle.
Thanks
and regards again to Betty Dunn. Breda Bord, Breda, good afternoon. The three teachers' unions have issued a statement saying that at their conferences this weekend that they will put the same emergency motion before the delegates. And the motion they've agreed on will seek to commit the unions to work together to demand vaccine prioritisation for teachers. Should that fail, the motion will mandate the unions to explore any and all options up to and including industrial action. That's a joint statement from the three. Breda Bord, you're reacting to that.
I think it's deplorable. They have no rights over anybody else in this country to get it. Everybody who's walking through this pandemic, from nurses to shop girls to people in bars, all the facilities, the best that we can do with the information we're given, the sanitization, the separation, everything is being done. Every single thing that can be possibly done is done for them, the same as it is done for the girls in the shop, the guards on the street. And if anybody was to get priority, the guards. I mean, if you had somebody coming at you with a gun, would you want a teacher in your way? No, you'd want a guard there to help you. And if anybody is to get priority, it's them. I had to sit and wait. I never left the house for over a year.
Wow.
And I have other friends who never left the house for a year.
And what do you think of the... Well, that motion will pass, by the way. There's no doubt about
that. Well, we shouldn't put up with it. I mean, the teachers are sitting on their BTM for 3 months every summer, fully paid. And, I mean, them children that were doing the leaving certs and everything, there was big, big halls. Every one of them... They could have been taken into the school and five in each class. They could have been taught. They could have been taught in the school if a little effort was made.
Okay, stay with us, Breda. Kathleen Henderson is in Dublin and is a retired primary school teacher. Kathleen, this motion saying that if the teachers aren't given prioritisation and vaccination, that they will... look at all options. This is three unions, including industrial action, Captain.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe. Yeah. I'm so embarrassed. I am a retired teacher and I agree with every word the lady said before me. But it is very, very embarrassing for me to hear something like that because hopefully if they do put that motion will be passed and if they put the motion in front of the teachers to vote on, hopefully it won't be carried by the general body of the teachers. That's my only hope. Because if it is carried by the general body of the teachers, I think they should be left out on strike. I would let them out on strike. Because in all fairness, Joe, everybody will be vaccinated by the time next September comes. The teachers have been sitting at home for months now. Should let them sit at home for two more months.
Well, a lot of teachers have been teaching.
They have been teaching, but they've been sitting. They've been teaching online, you know,
from
home.
Zoom,
where they've been very safe and very, you know, I would love to be able to go back out to teaching because I've been sitting at home for a year and I'm itching to get out to do something, Joe. Honestly, it's all part of the job as a teacher. we got tonsillitis, we got swollen glands, we got pains in our tummies, but we grew a great immune system as older teachers, you know. So it's all part of the job. And it's a great honour to do a job like that. And I think that the furor they're making over changing the cohorts is a disgrace. I would be shamed if I were them. Because in all fairness now, they have an opportunity to put their shoulder to the grind and to really be patriotic. I'm very sad for the children. I'm sad for the parents. But I'm very cross with the teachers. They should really, you know, just grow up, go to school and teach their children and be very proud to do so. And I'm sure most of them are, you know, Joe.
Yeah, I'm sure
most of them are, you know, because it's a great joy and a great honour to do a job like that, you know. Certainly for me, that's how I felt about it. That's how I still feel about it. But at the moment, I'm not telling anybody I'm a retired primary school teacher because there is a lot of bad blood out there at the moment about it.
Is there a lot of bad blood out there? Why?
Would you agree with that? There is. People are really resentful of primary school teachers.
Yeah, very, very resentful. I mean, the poor guards, if they wanted to strike for to get up on top of the list, they can't.
No, in all fairness, people shouldn't strike. You shouldn't strike during the pandemic because it's a national emergency. You should put your shoulder to the group and you should give it all you've got. It's only going to be for a while if you've got. Yes.
Everybody's forgetting that. Even the politicians, I'm backing the politicians on this one.
Trust me, when all this is over, there will be long memories and the teachers won't be smiled at for the stand they've taken.
Well,
I think they've done themselves.
I thought I was going insane. I had the wrong opinion. I'm sick to the IT listening to them.
Yeah, I think they've done themselves a lot of reputational damage, even by going this far. I really do.
Yes.
I really do. And I'm sorry to say that as a teacher, because they are my colleagues, and I'm sorry to say that, but I mean every word of it.
But Kathleen, realistically, and I know it's the worry, especially for Leaving Cert, when families see that there might be industrial action, but realistically, the teachers aren't going to go on strike, because if you go on strike, you don't get paid.
Which, you know, it wouldn't surprise me that they would ask to get paid, you know. But even if they go on to go slow, Joe, and make it awkward for parents and awkward for children with disabilities.
Yeah.
I mean, really, they should be, as that lady said, even while they were on that, they should be going to school. But honestly, if I were them, I would teach 8 hours a day at the moment to make up for everything that is possibly needed for children and for families, you know.
And Breda, you say you haven't crossed the door in a year.
Have you children, grandchildren, relatives? I have a granddaughter who's in America, and I haven't seen her for nearly 2 years. I have 7 other grandchildren. They might come to the window and talk into me. I mean, every single body in this country should be
We've all made sacrifices.
I mean, it's just simple logic. That's what it is. None of us knows when this started. We didn't know how to handle it. Even the politicians didn't know how to handle it. We're learning by mistakes and by errors and by the science. And we're learning. And we're nearly there. And you have them teachers crying out, poor woe is me. They have no right to go any top of the list.
But if they administer the vaccine by age, it will be done faster for everybody.
Yeah, I got mine because I'm sick.
Yeah, I haven't got mine yet. I'm dying for it.
Well, I hope you get it soon, love, because you're a great woman with a great intelligence that can see the two sides of the story. From what you're telling me earlier on, Kathleen, you should be getting it by age, you're 70.
Well, my 74-year-old husband hasn't got it yet either.
But
nevertheless, we are hopeful we get it by the end of April. We will hold on, Joan, to the end of April.
Okay, fair play.
We will hold on full stop. But that's something. If they did it by the age cohort, it would happen faster for everybody.
A lot faster, that's the
argument. But then the argument of the teacher unions is we were made a promise and the promise was broken.
Weren't we all made promises and promises were broken? Just grow up. I mean, and I'm sure at the time the promise was meant, but now things have changed, the science has changed, and the advice is different.
But the older teachers
will be done very soon if they just keep going.
Thanks indeed, Breda Borden and Kathleen Henderson. Thank you both. Fergus Sweeney produced, and Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. going electric, stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Soul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.